Hi, I'm Susanna Hewson from HSF's Head Office Advisory Team, and welcome to Reporting for Duties. Reporting for Duties is our limited podcast series aiming to provide bite-sized insights on corporate reporting and ESG. In this episode, we have Tim Stutt and Anna Cronio reporting for duty, and our topic for discussion is the strategy pillar of the Australian Sustainability Reporting Standards. Before we get into it, though, I would first like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from which we are broadcasting today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders both past and present. So, Tim and Anna, what are the substantial areas that clients should be aware of under the strategy pillar?
So, the first aspect that needs to be disclosed under this pillar relates to climate-related risks and opportunities and how they can be expected to impact on the entity's prospects. So there is a bit of a forward-looking element to this disclosure. The idea is to describe the expected impacts, but also over what time horizons will those impacts be? So short, medium, and long term, and what do you actually mean by those things? So I think in some ways this is probably going to be a bit more granular than what a lot of entities have been disclosing in relation to both climate-related risks and opportunities.
I do think too, one of the probably more subtle shifts from TCFD to the ASRS, and I guess really it's the shift from TCFD to ISSB, which is now for Australians enshrined in ASRS, has been a sort of a slight change from just discussing how climate-related issues will impact on strategy to now talking about the company's strategy for managing them as well. So under this pillar, quite a bit of the disclosure talks about impacts. So it talks about impacts on business model and value chains. It talks about strategy and decision making. Talks about how financial position, performance, and cash flows might be impacted over the different time horizons that Anna was talking about. But there is also more around how you're managing those issues as a business and how you plan to manage those issues as a business. And in that context, actually, there is quite a bit around resilience as well. So looking at the resilience of the business, does it, and I don't want to ruin that podcast, but it does also tie through to the risk management pillar as well, which we'll be discussing in a different episode. But when you're sort of looking at the way in which the strategy pillar disclosures sit together, there is a chunk which is around the impact part, but then there is a chunk which is around this management of those impacts part. Then there's the exciting forward-looking bit.
There is, but perhaps before we pivot to the forward-looking bit, something that's actually struck me as quite interesting about the impacts piece is that a lot of the disclosures actually talk about both current impacts and anticipated impacts. And so the way that each of the requirements is structured, there's a few different aspects that would need to be disclosed against it. So good to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. What I was alluding to with the exciting forward-looking aspects was really a reference to the transition plan disclosure required under this pillar. Anna, I don't know if you want to talk to us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so the idea is that if you've got transition plans, you need to be disclosing them. That will also include things like how you're planning to achieve your climate metrics, and also, assumptions are quite an important part, so there's disclosure requirements around that as well.
Mm. I think it does sort of lead to an interesting question for those companies which have a separate climate transition plan. So, for instance, those who are doing, say, on climate votes, or those who just publish a separate climate transition action plan or climate change action plan or climate transition plan or however they describe it, but separately publish that climate transition plan. How they address this pillar will be a little bit thorny because they will have to disclose that transition plan in the sustainability report, which will form part of their broader annual report. And in that context, they're either sort of having to duplicate something that they've previously had as a separate document, bring that level of detail into the annual report, which often the climate transition action plans are quite long, or do it in a way where they're maintaining their historical approach of a separate document, but having a high level description of it, which is disclosed for the purposes of the sustainability report. It's a few different ways of approaching the issue, and you know, obviously no market practice as yet, but if we were to hazard a guess, we would sort of expect that actually the benefit of having a separate climate transition action plan where it's able to deep dive into a range of different issues and sort of quite granular detail on how implementation will occur, the benefit is real. And actually, from an investor communications perspective, those documents are really quite helpful. So where we're sort of expecting a lot of companies to land is having that higher level transition plan disclosure in their sustainability report, or you know, it's probably not accurate to describe it as a summary, but a higher level version of it for the purposes of this regime.
The other sort of interesting factor that now weighs into this is that there's a modified liability regime where for 3 years from the start date of the legislation, there's sort of immunity from private liability where in relation to the transition plans. So if you've got it in your sustainability report, it may be protected, but we'd have to think through how that plays out if you've also got a separate climate transition plan that's outside your mandated sustainability report.
I agree, because there are some parameters in place about the application of that modified liability regime. So I think in terms of bite-sized insights, this is more of a granular disclosure pillar than some may initially think. It goes beyond the headline company strategy, but also your strategy for business management, company's resilience, and how you are planning to achieve any headline targets. So thanks for joining us. This was Tim Stutt, Anna Cronio, and Susanna Hewson reporting for Duty.
You have been listening to a podcast brought to you by Herbert Smith Freehills. For more episodes, please go to our channel on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, and visit our website, herbertsmithfreehills.com, for more insights relevant to your business.